going to say good morning, and then I thought twice about it. Good evening. Good evening. For some of you, good morning. I'm home, obviously, because now the microphone works properly and the camera's mounted to something. I did this last week from Japan, and I forgot all my stuff. So in case you're watching last week, it was an iPhone perched on top of a light that I did this video from. Now, it wasn't great, but it worked. We got a video out. Some interesting stuff. I thought some interesting stuff. Had some feedback on a couple of interesting things. I got follow-up stories today. So I am inevitably home now. I got back from Tokyo very early yesterday morning. It is Saturday here in Australia. It's not that hard, really, because we're only 1 hour difference in time zone from Japan. I mean, it's basically like north and a tiny little bit west. Only 1 hour time difference. But typically when you fly from this part of the world to most of Southeast Asia, I guess Japan's a bit more East Asia, anyway, north, you tend to have morning flights going up. So yeah, we got on the, I don't know, it was like 9 o'clock or something, got on the plane in the morning, you know, have some lunch, a little rest, you get off in time for dinner, and that's great. You come back the other way, and it's painful because you get on at, I think we get on, what time we get on? Let's say 9 p.m. or something like that. And then, of course, you want to have something to eat, and you do that, and you watch a little bit of TV, and before you know it, it's, you know, a couple of hours gone. You get 3 or 4 hours sleep, and then you're waking up for breakfast because it's only an 8-hour flight. It's actually not bad. But anyway, just got home really, really tired yesterday. I just couldn't do this video yesterday. Slept about 11 hours last night, and now I'm doing it at 4:45 on a Saturday arvo. G'day, Brendan. Good, mate. Good. Going good. Feel rested now? Good sleep last night, good jet ski today, I'm fresh, I'm good to go. Lots of interesting things. Let's start with the sponsor who need no introduction. Report URI is back there today. Guarding you from rogue JavaScript, don't get pwned, get real-time alerts and prevent data breaches. Hashtag secure your site. They're the two most noteworthy things that I mentioned about this particular sponsorship is that Report URI is obviously started by Scott Helm, a massive project on Scott's behalf. Next most noteworthy thing is I ChatGPT generated the sponsorship text, and it seems to have gone really well. So I generated some great stuff lately. So long as it's not images with words in it, because for some reason, DALL-E 3 just can't spell words in images. Report URI, we're the market leader in browser security technologies, enabling you to detect and mitigate attacks fast. Scott has written and shared so much about Report URI in the past. I have as well, particularly around things like content security policy reporting. Go and check it out if you haven't already. Massive thanks to Scott and Report URI for being there today. Tradie Trev's here. Travel's taken. Yeah, they have. I actually feel very, very good now. Very, I mean, like it's, at least I'm not jet lagged. I just like had a bad sleep night before last, but we're good now. Now, not only are we good, but we have a lot of good stuff to talk about today. Well, I guess good depends on your perspective. Let's talk about OneRep. Now, OneRep got a really serious krebsing, as they say, last week. And I spoke about this when I was in Tokyo. And I'm just going to bring up Brian's piece here, because one of the things that came up after Brian had written the piece is he realized, or rather other people told him that OneRep, and just to scroll back a bit, so OneRep is one of these companies where you pay them money and they will remove you from the internet. And the mechanics of how that works is they go through to legally operating data brokers and they're like, hey, we'd like to remove this person or that person or whoever. And they go through and they do that. And the issue that I've always had with this sort of service is that it only works against the most reputable data brokers. So the worst ones, the ones that are like trying to steal your identities and fish you and spam you and send you emails about seeing you masturbating and wanting money in order not to release the photos. Come on, we've all had that. Well, we've all had the, just to be clear, we've all had the emails before. Those ones are beyond reach. They're not going to remove your data. So I think the effectiveness of these services is questionable at best. Now, Krebs went through and discovered that OneRep, so an organizer, let's see if, I wonder if OneRep's actually said anything publicly beyond what the statement they just gave Krebs. Was it OneRep.com? That's OnRep. GoDaddy owns that one. OneRep.com. Let's try that one. Remove information about your family, location, income, credit score, property, age, life, that is, go on, from Google and 190 plus other sites. So for the most part, it tries to be legit. Newsroom. Is there anything in the newsroom? No. That's interesting because there has been news about them. So we get back to Krebs. Krebs did a proper Krebsing and effectively went through and found that this CEO, Dimitri Shelest, who runs OneRep, previously had all these associations to shady, let's just say shady AF data brokers. So it's like he was running the shady services, and then he set up a commercial service to remove your data from the shady. You see that, like the problem here. This is the problem. Krebs woke this up. What he didn't realize was that Mozilla had started using OneRep only like a month ago as part of one of their services, which they bundled in with Have I Been Pwned. And you don't pay to use the Have I Been Pwned bit. That's part of a Mozilla monitor, or Firefox monitor rather. Now, Mozilla Monitor Plus is the new service which bundles in OneRep. And Krebs hadn't realized. And a bunch of people in the comments are saying, hey, you know, this is what Mozilla's using. And then he was like, oh, holy shit, right, that's actually significant. And he obviously had some dialogue with Mozilla. I had a chat to some folks in Mozilla. I think it was more leaning a sympathetic ear more than anything else, because clearly they didn't realize the shady background of this service. Now, Krebs has followed up. He'd sent me a message this morning. In fact, I think he sent me a message to the effect of, you know, like, what's the bet Mozilla's going to drop them now? Like, they won't be able to use them. And sure enough, Mozilla has dropped them. And this is just come out. In fact, there's two things come out since last week. Mozilla dropping them and the defense that OneRep has sent. Now, I'm just reading on Krebs's website here. He's got a PDF with the from Dimitri with comments on the Krebs article. I haven't actually read the whole thing, but Brian just pointed a couple of things out to me which he thought were particularly interesting. And the bit here that I really like, Dimitri says towards the end of it, I get it. My affiliation with the people search business may look odd from the outside. You reckon? No shit. Like, really? In truth, if I hadn't taken that initial path of the deep dive into how people search sites work, OneRep wouldn't have the best tech and the template. This sounds a little bit like, if I hadn't been a criminal before, I wouldn't be good at catching criminals. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a bit of, I needed to be the bad guy in order to know how to stop the bad guys. Still, I now appreciate that we did not make this more clear in the past, and I'm aiming to do better in the future. Well, you've been Krebs, mate. Like, you don't have much choice now. Everyone's going to know in the future. I should read the whole thing, shouldn't I? Affiliation with data brokers. He's basically saying he's come clean, or he's gone clean. It's because there's a whole bit about affiliation with data brokers. Whatever old domains may be found and still associated with my name, because Krebs went through and have found all of these shady domains associated to him, I have long since abandoned. If they appear operational, they are not being operated by me. We advertise on a handful of data broker sites in very specific circumstances. Our ad is served once someone has manually agreed an opt-out. Anyway, didn't look good. So, Krebs today. New post here. The nonprofit organization that supports the Firefox web browser said today it is winding down its new partnership with OneRep, an identity protection service recently bundled with Firefox that offers to remove users from hundreds of people's search sites. So Mozilla has pulled the plug on OneRep, which is a hard one. Because it would have been hard, because they would have made a lot of investment in this service. I mean, put it this way, I know they've made a lot of investment in Have I Been Pwned, and if I turned out to be shady, that would be really hard for them. So I'm sure that they'd made a lot of investment in OneRep. And I don't know what contractual clause they had that they managed to exercise to pull the pin on that. But yeah, that's a hard one. In a statement released today, a spokesperson for Mozilla said it was moving away from OneRep as a service provider in its Monitor Plus product. They say, though customer data was never at risk, which is probably a fair statement, the outside financial interests and activities of OneRep CEO do not align with our values, Mozilla wrote. We're working now to solidify a transition plan that will provide customers a seamless experience and will continue to put their interests first. So that's screwed one rep, because you would imagine that the Mozilla relationship would have been significant, because remember, Mozilla's charging customers for this service, which is, you know, effectively on-selling it from OneRep. But not only that, like, what happens if you Google OneRep now? Like, if you Google OneRep, because you're thinking about using their service, let's try and actually just Google it rather than go to onerep.com. What are the top results? Top stories. Mozilla drops OneRep after CEO admits to running people search networks. Then The Verge. Mozilla just ditched its privacy partner because its CEO is tied to data brokers. OS News. Mozilla drops OneRep. It just goes on and on and on. So you're just not going to be able to search for this company now without finding Mozilla dumping them, Krebsing them, and just a lot of negative press. So that's, I don't know if it's certainly fair to a degree. Did it deserve to have the business maybe killed? Don't know. But you know how I feel about data brokers too. So limited sympathy for people doing that. Marek says, ironic reputation of one wrecked one rep. Ironic. Reputation of one wrecked one rep. I have not even had a beer today, and that is hard to read. But I think I get what you mean. All right, so I feel like that's the end of that story. It'll just be interesting to see if OneRep survives this and if they go on and do other stuff. But I've not replied to their tweet yet because I don't have a good reply to it. But someone just replied to my tweet where I shared this, and they said, how did this happen in the first place? How hard would it have been for Mozilla to do this kind of background check before investing in the, quote, relationship? Sheesh, what an epic troll by OneRep. I don't have the exact answer to how hard it would have been, but I know reading through the Krebs article, he pulled a lot of threads to pull this together. And at a guess, I think there's probably two fair things to say here. I don't think it would have been immediately obvious that there was that history and that relationship with the guy. And I think the other fair thing to say is I suspect Mozilla is looking much more carefully at how they vet partners that they intend to work with in the future. So I would suspect that both those statements are true. Now let's move on to other true or not true statements. AT&T. Now this one is interesting. So AT&T, the massive US telco. Let's pull the whole story together here. So back in 2021, there was a post to a popular hacking forum, and in that forum, there was an alleged 70 million AT&T person data breach. Now, that is a really, really massive number from a really, really well-known brand. It's a headline, right? Someone was selling the data. Bleeping Computer right up the time. Lawrence Abrams from Bleeping Computer continues to create a lot of really, really great stuff. There was a significant amount of money asked for here. Now, I'm not sure exactly how the mechanics of this work. Drop a note in the comments if you understand. What was asked for was a starting price of $200,000. I assume all this is USD because that's always the assumptions people make. Starting price, $200,000. Minimum step, $30,000. What does that mean? Flash, 1KK, which I assume is million, 1,000. So at the time it was written up, starting price 22,000, incremental offers of 30. Okay, so they're saying $30,000 off. So someone needs to offer me $200,000, the next person's got to offer 230, the next person 260, the next person 200, and so on and so forth. So anyway, it was all over the news then, and it was a really big thing. And then it just sort of all died down. And then literally last week, whilst I was trying to eat sushi and enjoy my time, I should talk about Japan too. I'll do that at the end. This data got dumped publicly. And I just woke up one morning in my hotel room and someone's like, yeah, here's the 70 million records. And now AT&T was denying it. And Bleeping Computer got onto it really quickly again. So again, Lawrence Abrams there. Got onto it really quickly, wrote it all up, got comments from AT&T saying, not our data. And we're just left in this, I just hate not having an answer. And in fact, this is where I started with the blog post, because I had to put this in a blog post to explain what I knew, what I didn't know, what the assumptions are. And I started by saying, I hate having to use that word alleged because it's so inconclusive, and I know it will leave people with many unanswered questions. So you've got a situation where AT&T is saying no breach. Other people are saying breach. And what's the truth? And the problem is as well, sometimes you can have a look at the data and you can go, well, yeah, you know, I can pull email addresses from there and I can check them into password reset and enumeration vectors and I can prove it. Nothing obvious there for AT&T. So I was looking at all this. Lawrence's story here, he'd connected to a bunch of people who were like, yes, this is actually my data. And to be clear, it's the usual stuff. Name, phone number, email address, physical address, but also date of birth, a bit more sensitive, social security number. Americans lose their mind when they lose social security numbers, just like we do with driver's license numbers here in Australia. We don't have SSNs here in Australia. So they really, I've often said before, SSNs are just like the worst kept secret ever, because it's meant to be this secret thing that you have that you use for identity verification, and then you just give it out all over the place because so many different places need it. So SSNs were accurate. For some reason, both SSNs and dates of birth were encrypted, but it looks like the private key was obtained and everything was just decrypted. So in this data dump was both the encrypted version and the unencrypted version. I needed, just because AT&T is saying it's not them, and because big companies and litigiousness, it's like I need to be really, really sure what we're doing here. So I reached out to a bunch of Have I Been Pwned subscribers in there. I think I had about 155,000 subscribers in there in total, which is a sizable number. A bunch of them came back with the data and they're like, yes, that's my data. And also, yes, I was an AT&T customer. And they're really two different things we're talking about here, right? So number one, is the data accurate? Is the date of birth, the phone number, the physical address, the social security number correct? Number two, where's it from? Now, number one, we have demonstrated emphatically. When I say we, myself, Florence, other people that he'd quoted, other security researchers in there as well, it is legitimate data. If you got the notification from Have I Been Pwned saying your data was in there, your data was almost certainly in there and accurate. But was it AT&T? So I put the data in Have I Been Pwned and sent out my 153,000 subscribers, actually. Just look at my own blog post here. We're in there. That's of the 4.8 million subscribers that I have, and the intersection with what was ultimately 49 million unique email addresses of the 70 million row corpus. Sent the notifications out, and then a lot of people have come back in the comments and gone, I have only used this email address at AT&T, which is interesting. Like, read the comments. There's 27 comments here on the blog post. Now, when we say AT&T, it's a big company. Part of AT&T is DirecTV, and a lot of people said, I have a DirecTV email address in there that I've only given to DirecTV. Now, how do we know you've only given it to one of those organizations? Because a bunch of people have catch-all domains and they use att@mydomain.com. And then they only give that to ATT. So when you end up with a situation where that email address turns up in a breach, it's pretty obvious where the data has originally come from. Caveat there being, what if the data was given to AT&T? AT&T have a partner to do something or other, send out surveys, print statements, package the modem for people that are getting, I don't know, internet, like whatever else it may be. And one of those partners had the breach. It's becoming overwhelmingly obvious that this data is related to AT&T, but they're still saying not their data. Now, I'm not litigious companies. I'm not necessarily saying it was them who had the data breach, but the correlation is so, so strong. And in some of the private chats that Lawrence and I have had about this as well, clearly they're holding that line very strong as more and more and more and more evidence just builds up that it is somehow related to them. Now, I need to find a friend in 18 to, oh, let's do this now. I must know someone in AT&T. This is like one of the few useful things that LinkedIn does. I should be able to go there, and I should be able to go AT&T. Who's there? CISO or something like that. This, like the nice thing now about having such a successful, well-known data breach service is when I do reach out to people in this industry or even in tech in general, most people have heard about it. Ooh, people, who do I know there? I've got to be able to find someone just to go, look, you really need to really take this seriously. I've got a lot of second degree connections. Oh, some of these look good. All right, I'll come back to that. Anyway, I just want the right person to say, look, there's something else going on here. Because the feeling I get at the moment is they're just going, nope, no breach, not us. And they just, you know, la, 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 then they just head off and do their thing. And I feel like they have really missed the overwhelmingly strong correlation that's happened. And again, it may not have been them. It may be one of their partners, and then they still have some liability around that as well. That doesn't get them off the hook. But just have a read of the comments and have a read of all the other commentary around this, the comments on Twitter and everything. Like, it's just fascinating. I think we'll hear more about that. I think that they will pick it up. They will take it more seriously. And I think that they will find a relationship back to them. Neil Caldwell is here. G'day from Sydney. Welcome back. Thank you, mate. James says, that's why I make a single address for every company. In addition to the name of the company, I add a year and a random key I can check. That's an interesting approach. Fritz says, Fastmail and 1Password to the rescue because I've got masked email, so they can generate unique email addresses that hide your original source email, so you know. And you're kind of right, James. It's to the rescue, but it still hasn't really – it hasn't had anyone – actually own up to it being their data yet in terms of the organization. But yeah, you know, same sort of thing. All right. Another breach, MediaWorks. MediaWorks in NZ, not a company that I had heard of before, but a company that has been very breached. Now, when we say very breached, let's go and have a read of the story. That one just went into Have I Been Pwned yesterday. So this is a media company that ran a lot of competitions. So we've all seen competitions online before. You go in there, you answer a few questions, you leave your personal details, nothing ever goes wrong. except for when they get breached and the individuals in their ransom. So the story I've linked through to here on rnz.co.nz is hackers connected to a MediaWorks data breach are demanding a ransom of US$500 in cryptocurrency from one of the victims of the data leakage. And the sense you get in reading this is that one or more, you can't imagine just one victim, one or more victims has been pinged by the hackers and said, send us money and then we'll remove your data from the... Sounds like one rep, doesn't it? I'm sure it's not, Dimitri. I'm sure it's not. But it's an interesting correlation, isn't it? Give us money and we will remove your data from the internet. That's just shady. Shady, shady, shady. So anyway, there's in total in Have I Been Pwned, 163,000 unique email addresses went in there, 70% we already had in the database. It's the usual sort of stuff. It's not too sensational. Name, physical address, phone, gender, date of birth, answers to competition questions. And the data was just, I think, 100-something files when it was obviously like one CSV per competition. Some of the questions or answers might have been a bit more sensitive than the others, but it's not AT&T data, not allegedly AT&T data with social security numbers in it. That's a different thing. Now, there was one other thing, actually, on MediaWorks, which I thought was nice. Someone forwarded me their disclosure notice. And I was having a bit of a read through this, and there's a bit here where they say, what was the heading here? What do I need to do? We understand the attacker has published the information online, and we recommend the following. Be vigilant, and the next bullet point is keep an eye on your email accounts, and then use multi-factor authentication, never provide your passwords. And just to be clear, there were no passwords in this either. And they said that in the disclosure statement. And I will say the disclosure statement is good. Like, I like it. And the best bit is when you get down to one of these bullet points and it says, You can check if you've been included in other breaches by visiting everbeenpwned.com. Now, after they publish that, you can also check if you've been breached in their data breach via everbeenpwned.com, which is very meta. And I don't think it's originally what they had in mind, but they must have known. It's like, your data's on the internet. You know, what's going to happen? So that's there. Now, one of the most boring topics ever next is email address validation. I had joked for years and years that it is impossible to write a regex for email addresses, and it is. It's impossible to get it 100% correct if you want to be strict to the RFC. We use regexes to extract email addresses from data breaches. And the way we do it is we're like, here's a file, run the regex over and just pull out all of the email addresses. And a little while back, that's been about a year ago now, I created an open source project and seeded it with the existing logic and said, look, let's improve this. We need to do a better job of making it fast to extract email addresses. Because when you get a big dump of data, like say the AT&T stuff, I need to be able to point it there, regex everything out, get the unique email addresses, because very often the same one appears over and over again, lowercase everything, order it alphabetically, because that's just the way we load it into the system, and that's it. And we've just had constant little glitchy things with that project. And the worst of it was I pointed it at the AT&T data the other day. Now, the person that sent me the AT&T data said, headline is 70 million. I've found 49 million unique records in there. I ran our email address extractor tool over it and got 21 million addresses. And like, that's a big difference to 49. I grabbed my old tool that I've used, I guess, for the 9 years up until about a year ago and got 49 million addresses. And what I found was the AT&T data is delimited by pipes, and pipes were not properly being detected as effectively like a beginning and ending of a word and breaking the email address in the data. And if you read the RFC, apparently you can have a pipe in an email address. And someone had then written this regex for Have I Been Pwned with the best of intentions and followed the RFC, but not realized that then if we have a great big string, let's say you've got a great big line and you've got like name, phone number, email address, social security number, date of birth, and everything's pipe delimited, that really screwed up getting those email addresses out. Let me ask ChatGPT, can you have a pipe symbol in an email address? Yes, technically the pipe symbol can be used in the local part, not in the domain part. Email address must adhere to certain rules, task force, ITF documents, subscribes, including the pipe symbol when quoted properly. An example of an email address using the pipe symbol could look like, all in double quotes, johnpipedoe@example.com. Now, can you imagine how many different websites would actually accept that email address? What's a good place? Can I search for is email address valid? And we'll take double quoted, John, you know, I'm just going to drop it here. I'm going to drop it in the chat. So this is what ChatGPT says is a valid email address. Let's see, emailchecker.net. What does that say? Check. a part followed by at should not contain the symbol. Quite, that's not even the right way. Now, this is literally the browser's integrated email address checker when you have a text input of type, I'm trying to remember this, so I feel like it's been so long since I looked at HTML, of type email. And it's losing its shit because of the quotes, is it? Check. See, now it's happy. Yeah, it just, like literally, the native email address checker will not let you do that. And I bet you if I went to like Have I Been Pwned and I tried to put that in, say, the notify me box, and I tried to use that address, notify me. Yep, it's the same native browser integration. It says a part followed by at should not contain the symbol. That's the quote. It doesn't like the quote. My point is, I don't really care about the RFC. I care about weeding out the crap and keeping the good bits. And we've just got way too many cases where people get very utopian about, well, there's an RFC, it's a spec, this is what everyone's meant to follow. Of course, this should work. And we miss a whole bunch of legitimate, valid stuff that's just delimited, say, by pipe, because people get religious about an RFC. So anyway, I have made another comment on one of the open issues on that open source project. We've got to sort this out, because at the moment, frankly, I don't trust the tool. I don't trust it to run over a corpus of data. I also don't want to use my old one because it's not as strict a validation of things like TLDs. We've got much stricter validation of TLDs now because it's a finite set. So I really actually need to get this right. So if someone out there wants to make a PR fixing this, I might actually add this additional information here in terms of the native browser, certainly in Chrome, the native browser email address pattern checker. I'd just really like to get this fixed because it's something that just shouldn't be a problem. Brendan says, I'll DM you my help desk. Let's see if it actually works. Lol. Well, yeah, send it to whoever you want. Just someone fix the bloody thing. Speaking of fixing bloody things, last thing. SQL tuning for Have I Been Pwned. Now, I've mentioned this on several of these weekly updates before, and I've had multiple people reach out and offer support, which is awesome. Thank you very much for that. Now, Stefan and I think, have now taken this as far as we reasonably can to try and make it go fast. And if you've missed the whole backstory, we're in the process of rolling Have I Been Pwned over from just an Azure table storage backend for the really, really big data, or the email address and breaches, through to a SQL Server database for many, many good reasons. And we're just finding the loading of breaches too slow because we're inserting very large amounts of data into very large tables that have various constraints and checks and other things. So for example, there are, in fact, I have a repo. It's not public just because I want to try and get this stuff as right as we can before we invite other people into this. So let's have a look. In this repo, I've documented the bejesus out of this thing. The breached email address table has 5.5 billion rows. So we've got 5.5 million unique breached email addresses. The mapping table between the email address and the domain has 12.4 billion rows. And it just maps an email address to a breach. So these are really, really, really large numbers. And we're just finding things are way too slow. And let me quantify it. In the breached email, it's just breached email breach. It's a mapping table. There's a breached email ID and there's a breach ID. Both of them are non-nullable integers. There is a composite primary key across those two items. When we had to insert 49 million rows into that processing AT&T stuff, it took 3 hours. So 3 hours just to put 49 million rows into a table. And it should be a small fraction of that. And inevitably, it is that composite primary key which is causing the problems. And I have lots of ideas of how that maybe should be better. We probably should just have just an auto incrementing number as an ID, and then we just have we have an index on the breached email ID itself, and just thinking what we need to join on. We probably don't need to put a unique constraint on there, which I would love to have for integrity's sake, but because we control the pipeline of data that flows in there, we probably don't need that. And if we select distinct out of the thing anyway, then it doesn't matter if we screw it up somewhere. And then every now and then we can go through and clean up any screw-ups anyway. Yeah, the point is that we've got all these different ideas, but every time we try something, let's say we're dropping and recreating an index on a 12.5 billion row table, I've got to turn the dial on SQL Azure all the way up, all the way to the top. And it might still take, I think one of these processes took a couple of days to recreate an index. And I'm paying for data turned all the way up. In fact, what we figured out for the AT&T breach is it cost about $130 to load the breach. That's just in terms of the cost paid per core second, or however Azure ends up breaking it down. So you end up having way too much duration in terms of time, and then way too much cost. So we've got to get this way down. Now, I've had a SQL Server MVP who's been doing this sort of thing for decades get in touch. So when I said we've got a closed repository here, I'm going to give this guy some access and try and get some help there. Many other people have popped up with some good ideas. Thank you. But I get the impression that you're pretty much at like Stefan's and my level in terms of actually understanding this. And look, we haven't done bad. You're not going to have a big bonus. We're not idiots. But I'm really looking for people that are database freaking gurus. If that is you and you're a SQL Server MVP, if you're on the SQL Server team in Microsoft, please get in touch. I'd love to give you access to this. And then I'm happy to share all the results with everyone after we've nutted it out and we've got the thing running fast. May mean we need to do some unconventional things just to make it work efficiently. I feel we're very close. And we're going to make a couple of index changes, and suddenly this is going to be faster than what it ever was. At the moment, it's taking about twice as long to load data as it was before. But we're literally down to just a couple of table speed issues. All right, so that's the bat signal. If someone's out there, please reach out. Niran's just joining right at the end. James says, I often see plus and dash in email addresses. I've never seen pipe that. Yeah, exactly. What sort of idiot puts a pipe in their email address? I don't care about the RFC. We just don't do this. Oh, I promised to wrap up on the Japan bit just before I wrapped up the update. So we had a week there. I think it was about my sixth or seventh trip to Japan. I hadn't been to Tokyo for about 20 years. I was last in Japan in Niseko snowboarding before Ari was born. So 15, 16 years ago, something like that. So I'd been there many, many times before, and my father lived there for about a decade, and I'd go up and down quite a bit and see him. So it was a pretty familiar place for me. First time for Charlotte. You know, she said that I hadn't ever realized before. She said, it's really quiet. Now, Tokyo is the world's largest city. It's twice the size of New York. And I've been in New York a bunch, and that is loud. Like, there's sirens everywhere, and there's horns everywhere, and, like, everything is loud. There's just something about Tokyo which is just constantly calm, except for when we're in the earthquake. I think it was, like, the day before we left. We're sitting there at breakfast, 38th floor, looking out there, Mount Fuji in the background, looks awesome. And then it's my first earthquake, so I'm very excited about it. But you're just sort of sitting there going, something's not right, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. And obviously, the building was shaking. And about 5 seconds later, everyone's phone in the restaurant starts pushing one of those emergency alerts. Now, I had seen one of those once before. I saw a test of one in Oslo. Must have been in, I think it was when we were there in January. So very recent. And then there were megaphones around the city as well. And they were all saying, you know, test, test, test. This one was like, there's an earthquake coming. You're like, yeah, no shit. We just got rocked in the building. But it was kind of fascinating because I'm like, it's probably not going to be that bad. Charlotte was a bit stressed. She was literally caught in the tsunami in 2004 in Thailand. So has had moments before where she's been a bit stressed about this sort of thing. And the waiter's just like, don't worry, building's earthquake proof. Okay. Guess we won't worry then. That's pretty cool. So that'd be awesome. John, I just said, you'd love to see a collaboration with you and Brent Ozer. I think it would be really entertaining. Now, Brent's name has come up as well. Brent, would we call him the SQL SAR at Microsoft? Something to that effect. So I'm sure Brent and I have chatted before. And in fact, that reminds me, I should reach out to Brent and actually shine the bat torch in his direction. Fritz is saying the food and sights looked epic. Yeah, they were. And, you know, I was talking to a mate of mine today. He's a Qantas flight attendant who lived in Japan for a while, speaks Japanese. He's up in there, back there all the time. And he was saying, you know, like, what did you like, you know, what sort of sights did you see? I was like, we walked a lot. But honestly, the thing that I keep remembering is the food. Oh, my God, the food was so good. And then the last night we went to one of those, like, just epic Japanese sushi bars where there's only, like, you know, a handful of people around a bar. Did send a photo of that on the Twitters. And there's just some old bloke who looks like he's been doing it for 50 years, making sushi, you know, pit by pit and handing it over. It was lovely. It was just so good. But the thing about it as well is just even the very mainstream food that you get every day, you know, most of the world, Australia, most of Europe I can think of, definitely the UK, definitely the US. If you walk into like your average high street, fast food shop or something, you know it's going to be shit. Like, you know it's going to be bad. But you walk in, and they do have, I'm not just talking about like McDonald's and KFC and all that sort of stuff, but like a outside, like more boutique-y delis, you know it's going to be ordinary. But there's so many places you walk in and get, beautiful ramen or okonomiyaki, I really like Japanese pancakes. And it's, you go in there and you have a couple of beers because we're on holidays, and it's just epically, epically good, consistent, cheap food, which was really, really cool. So I love Japan. I don't know when we'll go back there next. I'd love to for someone to invite me to a conference there. Part of the problem is it sounds stupid, but Japan is very Japanese, right? Now, Norway is very Norwegian, but everyone speaks perfect English. Most of where you go in the world, most of where I go in the world, people speak English, albeit with an accent, except me. And a lot of it, like if we were in Bangkok last year, yeah, it's pretty good English all over the place. I've been to KL, to Manila. It's very American there anyway. Obviously, Singapore, Hong Kong, all these places are very, very English literate. Tokyo is very minimal. It's much more like Beijing. Shanghai, very English literate. Shanghai is very Western. So Tokyo is still very, very, very Japanese, to the point where there's just so many people, even younger people, who don't speak English. And it's kind of fascinating because I remember the last time I was there, it seemed like it was the younger people, the people of the teens, 20s, 30s, who had good English literacy, and it would be the older generation who hadn't yet had that exposure. But this time, it just felt like just about everyone outside of like the big hotels and things. Anyway, that was awesome. We've got a couple of weeks before we go away again. I'm going to talk about that when I get closer to that time. Hopefully, we'll have fixed our database issues by then. I think, John, I'm going to reach out to Brent as well. It's a very good reminder. And yeah, thanks very much for tuning in. Catch you next week.